Chapter 5 Cini pedaled into London, cutting through Parliament Square and passing St. Albans Salmon Bistro, the place where she had first met Grath Cobalt and last lunched with Delilah. She tried not to dwell on the memories as she swung around Big Ben and crossed a narrow one-way street between slow-going automobiles, though it felt as if her dear friend's fairy-like laughter followed her. Glad that her self-made wind cooled her from the warming sun, Cini rode her bicycle down Grange Road and through Lambeth. The loud, low whistle of a departing train from the Central London Railway echoed through the city, though the tracks didn't cross through this part of London. Cini slowed as she rounded a corner, passing quaint houses until she reached a sizable house painted a deep sage green, though the heavy stonework across its face almost hid the color entirely. It had a small yard and a short wrought iron fence, every other picket topped with enchanted gaffer's bulbs that would light up once the sun went down. A security measure, Cini imagined. Magician Aviaski had never particularly cared for aesthetics. Cini dismounted her bike and combed her fingers through her hair before repinning it into its French twist. Magician Aviaski had resided in this home for nearly 2 years, having moved after Delilah's passing. The gaffer must have suffered from her own bad memories, though she never spoke of them to Cini. She approached the front door, knocked, and for a moment she stood on the porch of another house, knocking on a door that no one answered because Grath had already tied them up in the attic. Shaking her head, Cini squeezed her eyes shut and tried to banish the memories from her mind. "If you had gotten here sooner, she'd still be alive," her own voice whispered from the black cave somewhere at the back of her skull. It had become an all-too-familiar refrain. She rubbed her temples. "I'm always too late, aren't I?" she thought, her bones growing heavy. Had she made it but half an hour sooner to her dear friend Anise's home years ago, Cini could have stopped the other girl from killing herself. Had she arrived at Magician Avioski's home in better time, she could have stopped Grath from murdering Delilah. "Stop it," she whispered to herself. She rapped on the door, the sound of knuckles on wood shattering her redundant thoughts. Only then did she realize Magician Aviaski might not be home, especially given the business of her career. Cini frowned. As far as she knew, the gaffer no longer kept an apprentice. She couldn't bring herself to, not after what happened to Delilah. "At least I got exercise," Cini murmured to herself. She knocked again for good measure, then rang the bell. To her relief, she heard soft footsteps approach the door from inside. They paused for several seconds before opening it.
"Ms. Twill?"
Magician Aviaski said, standing in the doorframe and not sounding the least bit surprised. She must have spied Cini with some spell or another.
"I certainly didn't expect your company today."
"I suppose I should have telegraphed or sent a bird," Cini replied, clasping her hands behind her back. "I do hope you have a few moments to spare. I need to discuss some important and private matters with you."
Magician Aviaski's thin lips frowned, as they were wont to do, but the gesture lasted only a moment. She adjusted her glasses on her nose. A new pair, silver and enchanted, judging by the faint etch marks on the upper right-hand corners of each lens. If Cini recalled correctly from her ancillary gaffer studies, that enchantment could make the lenses magnify something of a near-microscopic level.
"Of course," she said, stepping aside.
"Come in."
Cini stepped in and removed her shoes. Magician Aviaski closed the door and gestured to the front room.
"Are you here because you're concerned about your test?"
Magician Aviaski asked, smoothing her skirt and sitting on a lavender chair near the fireplace.
"You're not required to try for your magicianship after 2 years, Miss Twill. Or are you troubled that Magician Thane won't be the one testing you?"
Cini blinked, sliding down onto the edge of the sofa, patterned with large prints of maroon and navy lilies.
"You know about that?" "It's my business to know," Magician Aviaski said, pointing her nose slightly closer to the ceiling.
She relaxed her shoulders.
But truthfully, I feel an obligation to follow up with charges of mine from Tagus Praff, at least until they're settled into their careers.
Cienny nodded, then smiled. I didn't take you for the sentimental type. Magician Avioski raised an eyebrow.
But no, she continued, clasping her hands over her knees. I'm not here about my test, or to speak about my studies at all. I came to you because of a telegram, Magician Thane, received last night.
Stiffness seeped back into the glass magician's shoulders.
From Magician Hughes, she said.
It didn't sound like a question, but Cienny nodded regardless. Magician Avioski must have received word of Saraj as well. Releasing a sigh, Magician Avioski leaned back in her chair and pressed an index finger to her forehead, just above the nose guard of her glasses.
That man cannot keep his wits all in one jar, she said. He might as well initiate Magician Thane into the Criminal Affairs Department officially.
Magician Thane is retired from that line of work, Cienny said with a little too much push.
Fortunately, Magician Avioski didn't seem to notice, or at least she did not respond. The gaffer took in a deep breath, dropped her hand, and leaned forward in her chair, placing her elbows on her knees, a very casual position for a woman Cienny had never before associated with that word.
I'm not part of criminal affairs, she said, meeting Cienny's eyes. I only know wisps, perhaps nothing more than what you know already.
It wasn't an outright refusal. Cienny had been dealt enough of those in her life to know the difference. Magician Avioski had been more receptive to her ever since the incident with Grath. Perhaps that was why she'd stopped investigating Cienny's relationship with Emery.
What I know would fit in a single telegram, Cienny said, her voice growing quiet despite the lack of eavesdropping ears.
Please tell me more. He threatened my family.
She swallowed.
He's supposed to be dead. They did take their time, didn't they?
Magician Avioski quipped, almost more to herself than to Cienny.
I wonder, once this is all over, if the need to dig information out of the man will have been worth it. I'd hate to think...
Her voice cut short. After clearing her throat, she finished with,
Of the people who he'll hurt.
Cienny bit her lip. For a moment, the ghost of Delilah stood in the hallway outside the front room, laughing at some unheard joke. But she was gone, her laughter only heard in memory. Another sigh passed from Magician Avioski's lips, as if the same thought had occurred to her.
He escaped en route to Portsmouth prison, where he was scheduled for execution.
From Hasler. Magician Avioski agreed. She shifted in her chair.
Somewhere near Gosford, I believe, between cities. I didn't press Magician Hughes for details.
But how? Cienny pleaded.
I researched the imprisonment of excisioners. Straitjackets, constant guard, solitary confinement. They even put bits in their mouth to keep them from drawing blood from their own tongue and cheeks.
Cienny felt her neck warm.
No need to school me, Miss Twill, the gaffer said. I'm quite aware. I believe he headbutted his guard and blew out his sinuses hard enough to give himself a nosebleed. I've heard excision spells cast using the magician's own blood are far weaker, but it was enough. He managed to collapse the side of the carriage and get away.
Cienny thought of the spell Lyra had once used to break down Emery's front door.
No one pursued him?
I don't know,
Magician Avioski said with a tilt of her chin and the faintest air of exasperation.
I imagine there was a chase. No sane person would think to transport Saraj Prendi without a great deal of guards, especially of the magician type. But it's not under my jurisdiction. I simply don't know. But where?
Would Saraj try to flee England, as Emery suspected? Portsmouth and Hasler were on the southern coast, weren't they? An easy escape. Saraj would be a fool not to take it. Still, the contents of her stomach churned. Sienny kept the thoughts to herself, shoving them down deep enough in her brain that they tickled the back of her neck. She cleared her throat, trying not to react noticeably to the news, and asked, "What did Saraj do prior to the paper mill?" Magician Avyasky tapped her chin, then readjusted her glasses once more. Instead of offering another excuse about how she wasn't involved in criminal affairs, she managed to say, "I believe he was involved in some ordeal in Scotland, along with Grath Corbolt and Lyra Hobson. I'm not sure of the details." "But Miss Twill," she said, scooting forward on her chair, "you must believe that you and your kin will be safe. It's not in Saraj Prendi's criminal profile to pursue them any further." The words offered little comfort. "I thought you weren't part of criminal affairs," Sienny said. "How would you know?" The gaffer frowned. "Saraj Prendi has a reputation extending far beyond English law enforcement. That is a naive question." Sienny sighed. "You are right, of course." She wrung her skirt in her hands, but stopped short of wrinkling it. Her thoughts felt like muffin batter. Smoothing out her skirt, Sienny closed her eyes just long enough to gather her senses. Then she reached into her bag and grabbed a rectangular piece of gray paper. She tore it in half down the middle and instructed it, "Mimic." Magician Avyasky raised an eyebrow. Sienny handed half of the paper to her. "Think of it as mirror-to-mirror communication," Sienny explained. Indeed, a mirror spell would be much more prudent than this folder spell, but Magician Avyasky didn't know about Sienny's exercises in bond-breaking, and Sienny was not ready to share the information. Once a secret spread to too many minds and mouths, anyone could learn it, including an Excisioner. Sienny continued. "Anything you write on your half will appear on mine. Please, if you hear any more news, or if you need to contact me for whatever reason, use this. It's quicker and more private than a telegram." The glass magician glanced over the half sheet of paper. To Sienny's relief, she nodded and folded it into quarters before slipping it inside her tailored jacket.
"Very well," she said. "I'll keep it on hand."
Sienny's shoulders relaxed, which was how she realized they had tensed.
"Thank you for your help. I'm just trying to ease some concerns." "Gosport," she thought. "Hasler to Portsmouth. I need to know for certain that he fled, that he won't come after us. I have to know there won't be any more Delilahs, Anises."
Sienny stood, holding her bag to her. Magician Avyasky stood as well.
"Would you like some tea?"
she asked, lips twisting with what could have been worry.
"Do you have a buggy waiting?"
"No, thank you, and I'll get home fine," Sienny said, punctuating her reassurances with a smile. "And I should be getting home. I have more studying to do before my test."
Magician Avyasky seemed pleased with that statement.
"Agreed. Take care, Sienny."
The gaffer showed Sienny to the door. Sienny took up her bike and walked it across the yard and down the walk, watching Magician Avyasky's front door through the corner of her eye. She turned the next corner and seated herself on the bike. She rode farther into the city, toward Parliament Square, where she heard Big Ben chime the second hour. This time, she didn't cut through the square to return to Emery's cottage. She parked her bicycle outside St. Albans Salmon Bistro, which was, ironically, the place where she had lost the last one. Smoothing her skirt and fixing her hair, Sienny began to walk toward the Parliament building itself. It was more public than she would have liked, given her purpose, but she knew the mirror was of good quality, ensuring a certain measure of safety. Besides, there wasn't time to find anything better. The lavatory door locked, at least. As she neared the building, a familiar laugh caught her attention. Passing Fine Seams, a tailoring shop, Cianney peered around a corner and searched the various shoppers and pedestrians filling the narrow road leading away from the square. She spied her sister, Zina, leaning against the brick side of Fine Seams in a dress that was almost indecently short. She was with two men, one who was barely old enough to be called a man, and another who looked to be Zina's age. He held a cigar in one hand and leaned one elbow against the brick wall.
Zina!
Cianney called, jogging down the street. A surprise to see her sister here. Her family had moved to Poplar, which was too far away for a comfortable journey to Parliament Square. Zina glanced over. She didn't seem enthused by the chance meeting, which made Cianney slow down. Cianney nodded to the two men before asking,
What are you doing here? Mom and Dad, are they here too?
Prancing around the heart of London, just waiting for a certain exciseur to put them on the menu?
Zina rolled her eyes.
I'm 19, Cianney. I don't need an escort.
I didn't say you did. I was just wondering.
Can you wander over there?
Zina asked, gesturing down the road.
I'm a bit preoccupied.
Cianney glanced to the older man.
Excuse me, just a moment, she said.
He did not so much as step back. To Zina, she said,
What's wrong? Why are you acting like this? I haven't seen you in 2 months, and suddenly I'm a pest?
Zina buzzed her lips to imitate a fly. The two men chuckled. Cianney swallowed a grumble and straightened her shoulders. Inclining toward Zina, she said,
Listen, you should probably go home. There are things afoot right now, and I'm worried about the family. Would you—
Cianney! Zina snapped. Are you deaf? You, of all people, have no right to tell me about propriety.
A few passers-by glanced over at Zina's outburst.
I'm not talking about propriety. I'm talking about your safety,
Cianney countered. Her mother had mentioned Zina's new habits, the late nights and unruly friends. But had her sister really grown so hard? Zina pushed off the brick wall and straightened, standing about an inch taller than Cianney did.
I know about you and Magician Thane, you know, she said,
a little too loudly for comfort. Cianney flushed.
What about me and Magician Thane?
I heard our parents talking, that's what, she said. Criminy, Cianney. It's like shagging the principal. Isn't he a divorcee, too?
Scalding heat permeated Cianney's skin, ripening her like a tomato.
Voices of, What did she say? And, That girl? Echoed around her.
She could feel time slowing, and the passers-by slowed along with it, clearly eager to overhear more gossip. Zina folded her arms. Cianney's pulse drummed in her ears. She felt sick in her chest.
I'm not, she whispered, doing that, Zina, with anyone.
She thought her ears would light with fire, her cheeks burned to ash. But the moment passed, as even the worst moments do.
Whatever you say, sis.
Zina waved a hand carelessly and walked away without a backward glance. The man with the cigar grinned at Cianney and even dared to waggle his eyebrows at her before following. Feeling stark naked and an inch tall, Cianney spun back for the main road, walking briskly on marionette legs. To her horror, she spied none other than Mrs. Holloway, who leaned toward an older companion as she stage whispered,
I know him. Magician Thane, that is. The girl so young, and him without a wife. All alone. It's a wonder what they get up to. God save me,
Cianney prayed, clutching her bag to her body.
I've done nothing wrong.
She continued walking, the exercise moving her blood away from her face, and with it any outward show of humiliation. Her mind whirled. True, she and her sister had grown apart in recent years, but they had been the best of friends before Cianney started secondary school.
What's wrong with you, Zina?
The Parliament building loomed ahead. Sienny's memory flashed back to her conversation with Magician Avioski, and she clung to it with all 10 nails. Saraj. She needed to focus on Saraj, not on Xena, not even on Emery. She let herself inside. Two guards glanced at her as she passed, but just about anyone was allowed to traverse the first floor of the building, so long as they didn't look suspicious. And a young woman of Sienese stature never looked suspicious, not with her skin more or less returned to its normal hue. She walked with her eyes straight ahead, smiling at anyone who passed, nodding at a businessman who first nodded to her. When she reached the woman's lavatory on the left, she kept her pace and stepped inside, listening for the sounds of others before locking the door. She took a moment to gather her wits and catch her breath. Saraj, focus on him. In the powdering space between the door and the toilets hung a large mirror against a wallpapered wall, just over a polished dresser beside a cushioned chair. Sienny remembered this mirror well. Delilah had used it to take her to and from her temporary flat. Sienny squared her shoulders and pulled the chair around to the front of the dresser so she could stand on it and reach the mirror. Sienny slipped her hand under the collar of her blouse and pulled free her charm necklace and pinched the wood charm in her fingers, muttering the words that would break her bond to paper. She resealed herself to glass, then touched the edges of the mirror the way her friend had done so long ago. And she searched. She pushed her consciousness into the mirror, probing for an unknown signature, feeling her spirit pull like taffy as she explored farther and farther from the lavatory, past the mirrors in Parliament and at Square, past the mirrors in London and Croydon and Farnborough. She stretched, her consciousness spinning into threads. It drained her. She had never tried this spell at so great a distance. But it would work. She had tried the spell before, in the confines of her bedroom, albeit with a much smaller mirror. There, she thought. This feels close enough. Holding on to her search spell, Sienny traced her hand around the mirror clockwise, counterclockwise, and clockwise again. She murmured, "Transport, pass through." The mirror rippled into silvery liquid, waiting to swallow her. Holding her breath, Sienny stepped through it,